Okay, good evening, everybody. Tonight's shiur, we're going to discuss the issue of basar and dagim, which is a famous question that many people ask. What are the parameters about splitting the cooking of basar v'dagim, the eating of basar v'dagim, the utensils of basar v'dagim? I want to discuss that, and then we'll turn into a broader conversation about hishtanus hatvayim bizman hazeh. Do we assume that there are certain instances in halacha that the teva has changed, and therefore the halacha actually changes? And I just want to go through, in the end of this year, a couple of very important examples, and we'll travel through many different tchumen in Shulchan Aruch, in Eben Ezer, in Aruch Chaim, Yerudeya a little bit, and discuss certain cases where we find clearly that the Acharonim assume that there is Hishtanus Hatvam Bizman Hazeh, and therefore the issue of fish and meat, Bizmanenu, should not be a surprise that there are those who feel that Nishtana HaTeva and the whole thing is mutter. So let's begin Mehakala Lakavit. We have a Gemara in Brachos Dav Lamed Beis Amud Beis, as well as Avodah Zarah Yud Beis Amud Beis, where the Gemara tells us about not doing something which is a sakana. A person is not allowed to put his life in danger. I think it's important that we first give the background about the Isser of putting oneself in sakana, and then we'll move into our discussion specifically about the sakana of fish and meat. So this halacha that we find in the Gemara in both of these two places, in Brachos Lamed Beis, Avodah Zarah Yud Beis, is quoted actually in three different places in Shulchan Aruch. Number one, it's quoted in Shulchan Aruch Chayshem Mishpat, Simen Tav Chav Zayin. Number two, it's in Yerudeya, Simen Kuf Tav Zayin, and that Simen in Yerudeya is all about all the different things that are Asur Mishum Sakana. The Shulchan Aruch spells out a bunch of things that a person should be careful about. And number three, it's in Simen Kuf Ayin Tes in Yerudeya as well. So this is something that we actually take seriously, and it is something that is halacha l'maisa. The Gemara says in Yuma daf, in Chulin daf Yudam and Beis, Chamira Sakanta Me'isura. Not only, we know that we're all very careful not to violate Isurim, we know that Safik Daraisa L'chumra, generally we're very careful about Isurim Daraisa, we're very careful about certain things. But let's say we have a Svek Sveika, so generally by a Svek Sveika, we have room to be Mekel, we have a lot of room to be Mekel, and there are many instances in which we would say that the halacha is L'kula. However, since we paskin la halacha in Shulchan Aruch Aruch Chaim Simen Kufayin Gimel, as well as in Yerudeya and Kuf Tazayin, that chamira sakanta meisura, that sakana is more severe than a violation of a real isur itself, therefore the Darkei Tshuva, quoting many Acharonim, writes that even when it comes to a svek sveka, one would have to be machmir. If the svek sveka is about something which is a sakana-oriented issue, then one would have to be machmir and not go ahead and get involved in that particular thing. Even though by regular Isurim we would say Svek Sveka go be Mekel, but by Isur, by a Safik of Sakana, one has to be Machmer even more. What is the Makar that Sakana is Asur at all? How do we know this in Chumash? So the Rambam writes in number Aleph on the Sur sheet, the Rambam tells us in Perek Yud Aleph, Hilchos Rotzeach Hashmiras HaNefesh, Halacha Dalid. From the fact that it says, Hisham Lecha Hashmar Nafshecha Me'od, that's where the Rambam learns the din. Zak the Rambam. V'chein kol michshol sheyesh bo Sakanas Nefashos. Anyone who has a situation where he's faced with something that has in it some sort of sakanas nefashos, mitzvahs esei lahasiro ulihishamri mimenu. It's a mitzvahs esei de araisa to stay away from that thing and to remove the michshol, to remove the thing that can cause a major problem. Ulihizar bedafer yafa yafa, says the Rambam, shenemar, hishamar lecha ushmar nafshecha meod. V'im lo heisir, if the person does not take away the michshol and he allows the michshol to make some sort of problem later on, so number one, what tells me that I have to stay away from a problem is Hishamar Lecha Shmar Nafshecha Me'od. What tells me that if I don't take away a problem and someone ends up getting hurt, or even if someone doesn't get hurt, I'm mevatel mitzvah sasei of lo sasim damim b'veisecha. Fine. This is codified in Shulchan Aruch and Chayshim Mishpat Siman Tav Chav Zayin Sifches. That's number B. Zok the Mechaber. Anything which is a sakana, mitzvah says lahasir l'sham imenu l'zavim redafer yafesh and emar hisham lecha ushmar nafshecha b'im lo heiser. If a person doesn't remove the dangerous item, v'iniach hamachsholos hamibim l'di sakana, pitom mitzvah says ve'aver belosas and damim b'veisecha. So if you look in the Minchas Chinuch, mitzvah tavkuf memvav, the Minchas Chinuch jumps on this Rambam and the Chinuch and the Shulchan Aruch, and he says, I mean, obviously the Shulchan Aruch is getting it from the Rambam. It's a direct quote. But he jumps on him and he says, I don't understand. We've all learned Pirkei Avos, and in Pirkei Avos Paragimel, we are all familiar that this pasuk sounds very familiar. What does the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos quote this pasuk? Hishamar lecha ushmar nafshecha meod. What's that referring to? What? Divrei Torah. Frektim and Chaschinuch. The Mishnah says beferish that we use this pasuk not to tell me that I should stay away from physical sakana. Rather, the Mishnah uses this pasuk to say either that you're not allowed to forget Maimon Har Sinai, that's the literal translation, or like some Mefarshim explain, the Mishnah means you're not allowed to forget the Torah. But either way, be it as it may, according to either of the Rishonim, that's not supposed to be used to tell us that you're not allowed to get involved in sakana. So how does the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch afterward use this pasuk for something which is entirely different than that which the Mishnah uses it for? If you look in the Chinuch, so the Chinuch writes in Siman Tavkuf Mem, in Mitzvah Tavkuf Mem Vav, that you're right, the Minchas Chinuch is right. And in fact, we don't learn this Isser from Hisham al-Khar Shmar Napshach HaMiyod, rather we learn it from the pasuk Lo Sasam Damim Bevesecha, that a person has to be careful not to make any michshal. And not only does that include that if someone ends up getting hurt, I'm going to be responsible, but it also means that I have to make sure not to get involved myself in particularly dangerous situations. Now, is this a real Isser Daraisa, or is this just a Din Derabanan, an Asmachta, right? So that is a big question in the Mefarshim and the Rishonim. So the Rambam writes in Perek Yud Aleph, Hilchos Rotzeach Shmiras HaNefesh Halacha Hei, the very next halacha. Look at number Gimel. The Rambam says as follows. Harbe Dvarim Asru Chachamim. So that's warning flag number one. It seems, the Rambam says, Asru Chachamim, but that's never a clear indication, because Asru Chachamim could mean that really the Torah asked it, just the Chachamim told us in which instances the Torah actually meant what it said. So Asra Chacham is not a good enough indication yet, but then the Rambam says, there are many instances in which the Chachamim asked it, Mnei Sheyesh Behem Sakanas Nefashos, V'chala Ovar Aleihem V'Omer, if a person goes against what the Chachamim said, and he says that Hareini Misakin Ba'atzmi Yimala Acherim Alai B'Kach, it's nobody's business. My life is in my hands. I'll do what I want. Who's going to tell me that I shouldn't get involved in Sakana? If I decide I want to get involved in Sakana, it's my problem. Don't tell me what to do. Says the Rambam, Mo'eni Makrit B'kach, Makanos HaMakas Mardis. Seems to be a very clear indication that the Rambam assumes this is only a Din D'Rabbanan. Perhaps it's an Asmachta, but he says it's Makas Mardis. And we know Makas Mardis is only Mid'Rabbanan. So in Shulchan Aruch, they quote the Rambam verbatim. That's in Choshem Mishpat, Siman Tav Chav Zayin Sif Yud. So it quotes the Rambam. So it would seem that we assume that this would only be a Din D'Rabbanan. The Be'er HaGadol over there argues, and he says, no. The reason you get Makas Mardus is not because this is only Midrabanan. The reason you get Makas Mardus is because, really, this is an Issa Daraisa. But sometimes we have, let's say, Chatzi Shir. Right? The Gemara says Chatzi Shir is Asa Midaraisa. It's the Gemara in the end of Yuma, last parak in Yuma. So we know Chatzi Shir is Asa Daraisa. Do you get Malkus on a Chatzi Shir? No. But you get Makas Mardus. So, says the Be'er HaGadol, you don't see that every time you get Makas Mardus, we don't see clearly that that's for sure an indication that this is only a Din D'Rabbanan. V'haraya, we have the Din of Chatzi Shir Asim in HaTorah, and still, you don't get Malkus Midaraisa, but you get Malkus Mardus. So that's what he writes over here. Perhaps, even according to the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch, this is really a Din D'Araisa. A person has to be careful not to get involved in any Sakana because it's a Din D'Araisa, and the reason you're going to get Malkus Mardus is for some other reason. There's a reason why you don't get Malkus D'Araisa. Okay. So now let's move on. The Gemara says in Ksubas Daf Samach Amud Aleph, going over to Samach Amud Beis, Zakti Gemara as follows. Just to give the background of the Gemara, when you have a situation where a man passes away, so his wife is now a almana, so she's allowed to get married to whoever she wants. I mean, obviously she can't marry a mamzer, she can't marry what was that? Right, she can't marry anyone who's usher, but she's allowed to. She's free to marry, she doesn't need get, she doesn't need a chalitza. So let's say you have a situation like this. The woman has children, and she goes ahead, she wants to get remarried. Let's say she has a young child, and the young child is still nursing, right? So the Gemara has an interesting din. Zakti Gemara as follows. Tana Rabbanan. Meinekes Shameis Baila. Everyone look at number Dalit. The Gemara says if you have a Meinekes, a woman who's nursing her young child, and suddenly her husband passes away. Besoch Eser Ma'arba Chodesh. In the first 24 months after the child is born, meaning until he's 2 years old, she's not allowed to get married, and she's not even allowed to get engaged to anybody else. That's the Tanakhama. A mayor, who we paskin like, assumes that you're not allowed to get married or engaged for the first 24 months of the child's life. Doesn't mean 24 months from the misa of the husband. It means till the child is 2 years old. Rabbi Huda disagrees, and he says, no, after Yirchas Chodesh, it's good enough. Says the Gemara, why is it Aser? I didn't put it on here, but the Gemara has a long arichas there, why is it Aser? Zakti the Gemara as follows. Because we're concerned, a very strange concern. Perhaps the woman's going to go and get married, and she's going to become pregnant right away, and then she'll stop nursing, because very often the milk dries up once she becomes pregnant, so maybe she's going to stop nursing, and then the child is not going to have any sustenance, and you have to give him real milk now, you have to go to the supermarket and buy food, the new husband's going to say, well, it's not my child, I don't care, you take care of him, it's your problem. She's going to say, well, I don't have a job, and I'm pregnant, and I can't move, you know, what do you want me to do? So now this child is going to end up dying. That's the Gemara's Chashash. Mamash Apelet. Frekta Chassam Sofer, he says, I don't understand. Chassam Sofer has this in Tshuvas in a few places, but really the Pischei Tshuva is the one who quotes this Chassam Sofer. The Pischei Tshuva is in Yerodeya and Simon Shin Nun Zayin, for anyone who wants to look it up. So the Pischei Tshuva quotes Chassam Sofer and he says as follows. I don't understand. This Chashash of such a bum of a husband, he obviously loved this woman, no? Otherwise, why do you marry her? What? What? She had money. So if she has money, then there's no chashash either. Right? So there's no problem. So what are we talking about? We're talking about a poor girl. So why do you marry her? For looks, right? Whatever. You married her, she's a wonderful person. So you wanted to marry this girl. Now, you're going to say she becomes pregnant, the child's not going to have any food. Really? The new husband's really not going to give a bottle of milk? He's not going to give $5 a week to go buy a bottle of milk from the store? I mean, this chashash is crazy. You're really chashash that the husband's going to let this child die? It's the young child of the wife that he loves so much. What's the pshat? That's what some surface cash. So I think we assume that if she's going to get engaged, it's a light plug, meaning once you get engaged, we all know what happens. It's a big problem with Mizmanenu. When a couple gets engaged with Mizmanenu, right? Rabbi Breuer always used to say this over, that you shouldn't call a chasn and kala until they get married. Why? Because people think nowadays you get engaged and all of a sudden the laws of Yichud don't apply and people think that the laws of Negiyah don't apply. And meanwhile, api halacha, you have no status of anything until you stand under the chuppah. When we say engaged nowadays, it doesn't mean anything. So that's the same over here. You get engaged, and in the times of Chazal, engaged meant really engaged, the serious.
This is not engaged.
Arusa, right? Real engagement. So real engagement is serious. So
Tanoim.
No, more than Tanoim. Real engagement is more. Right, but they can get married after they get engaged. They're one step closer to getting married. Okay, but a quick wedding. She's an almana, right? She wants to get married. She has a family. That's exactly the chashash. So, Prekhtach Sam Sefer, I don't understand. The Gemara is really serious about this chashash. You really think she's going to go ahead and get married. She's going to become pregnant right away. And the husband's not going to support the child because now she can't nurse him anymore. I mean, the chashash is ridiculous. Zarkach Sam Sefer, the pshat is as follows. The Gemara says in Ksubas, Daf Tes Vav Amud Aleph, that when it comes to issues of pikuach nefesh, we don't take chances. Even though most of the times a husband is going to be normal, he's going to marry a woman, and if she has young children to support, obviously he's going to take care of them. But once in a while, you're going to have a crazy husband who just married her for her looks and married her for something else, and he doesn't care about her children. So he's going to taka allow the child to die. So zaktach sam sofer, since we assume lahalchul bepikuach nefashos achar harov, so mamela, we are going to make a new dinder abanan and say that a woman who loses her husband is never allowed to get married within the first 24 or 18 months of the child's life because we're concerned that perhaps the child is going to come to a sakana to pikuach nefashos. That's what the Chassam Sofer tells us. Now, what you see from the Chassam Sofer is as follows. The lashon that the Chassam Sofer uses is, this is not an echad mina elef. This is not one in a million husbands is a bum like that. It's one in a thousand, one in a hundred. Right, we have plenty of bozos out there who are willing to marry a woman and ruin her children's life. Right, so what you see from there, my father likes to point this out, and the other achronim pointed out also. My father just wrote a long shtickle Torah about it, but basically, what you see from the Chassam Sofer is that if you would have a situation where it's echad mina elef, let's say you have a situation where it really is one in a billion, right? So then, anachanami, we would say, even though the Gemara says lo halchol bepikuach nefashos acharov, then when it comes to issues of life and death, when it comes to sakana, we shouldn't go after the rov. However, when it comes to something which is such an overwhelming rov, one in a million, one in a billion, echad mina elef, then we assume that you have the right to go bus a rov, and you have the right to assume that nothing is going to happen. Therefore, when it comes to Hilchos Shabbos, let's say, this makes a big nafka mina. When it comes to Hilchos Shabbos, so we say, if, let's say, somebody thinks that there's something wrong, and we check it out with the doctor says, you know, you really have to go to the hospital, get it checked out. We know 50, 60, 70% of the times nothing really happens. This is not really something which causes a major illness. Still, what if a guy has an ingrown toenail? And one in every million and a half cases of an ingrown toenail ends up being a pikuach nefesh. I assume you can have such a thing that you get an ingrown toenail, an infection, and the guy is it's possible pikuach nefesh from it. So yes, it happens once in a billion times. But when it comes to a guy having an ingrown toenail on Shabbos, we're not going to say, oh, the halach pikuach nefesh is acharav and go be mechal Shabbos. No, one in a million is the only probability that the ingrown toenail is going to inflame into something else. So that is where it makes a big nafkamina when it comes to Hilchos Shabbos as well. But let's say you have the middle case. One second. We do have a Gemara in Yevamos which says, Shomer Psayim Hashem. That sometimes there's some point where a person is able to rely and say, Shomer Psayim Hashem, it's up to God. So my father understood that to mean, we don't just say, oh, jump off the bridge and say, oh, Shomer Psayim Hashem, everything's fine. What do you mean? 99.9% of the time that a guy jumps off a bridge, he dies. So you can't say Shomer Psayim Hashem. That's just, you have to go after your own, you have to make sure that you don't put yourself into danger. But let's say you have a situation like this, where ingrown toenail, most of the time it's not a problem. So should we be Mechal Shabbos or not? So in a case like that, you say, Shomer Psayim Hashem, that's where we rely. What if you have the middle case? What if you have something which some people are nervous about, and other people are not nervous about? So how do we call the shot for a situation like that? Half the people in the world would say, yeah, this is very serious, you got to go to the hospital. Other half the people in the world would say, nah, this doesn't bother me at all. I'm not concerned, I'll go after Shabbos. So what do you say in a case like that? So both the Chazon Ish and the Chafetz Chaim write the same thing. One in the Pe'er Hadar, that's the Chazon Ish's biography, and one in the Teras Chesed of the Chafetz Chaim, correct. So they both write the same thing. That in a case like that, it's up to the patient to decide for himself what he wants to do. So if you have a patient who is very nervous, and he thinks that the 50% of the world that's concerned is really correct, so let him be Mechal Shabbos. If you're the patient that is from the other 50% of the world that's not nervous, then you are not Mechal Shabbos. But if you have a 99% of the chances that when a guy gets a heart attack, he's going to die unless you give him treatment right away, and he says, no, not nervous, what do you mean? Then we have to be Mechal Shabbos, even if he's screaming and yelling that he doesn't want us to be Mechal for him. Yeah.
The woman with the child, so wait 2 months. Or wait 6 months. Nothing's going to happen. It's not like waiting with a toenail or a toenail. Well, that's why you have to Shabbos. Something can happen now.
What do you mean? He can go and get married to someone else.
So he just get married, but nothing's going to happen. Nothing is going to be happening by not doing it.
She can ruin the rest of her life. She can stay in
Almana. She
can stay in Almana the rest of her life.
She can stay in Almana, but nothing happens.
That's worse than an ingrown toenail. No?
Not that an ingrown toenail can be a very dangerous thing. You can lose your leg and have a problem.
It's interesting you say that. You know, the Rabbi Yosef Engel quotes a Yerushalmi, an interesting Yerushalmi, where the Yerushalmi writes in Shabbos, if I'm not mistaken, I haven't seen it in a while, but I think he says for the Yerushalmis in Shabbos that we have three Averis that are Yaharik Val Yavar. Gilei Arayis, Avodah Zarah, Shfichas Dam. Zark Rabbi Yosef Engel, if not for the fact that Gilei Arayis was Yaharik Val Yavar, I would have said that a Naguna who's stuck and can't get married now is allowed to go ahead and violate the Isra of Gilei Arayis and marry somebody else even though she doesn't have a get, because it's Pikuach Nefesh.
Wow.
Comes the Chazal and tells us that no, it's Yaharik Val Yavar, so Gilei Arayis, therefore you can violate even though an Aguna situation would be Pikuach Nefesh. See the Chomer? You see the Chomer of how seriously Chazal took the case of an Aguna. So Aguna doesn't only mean our sense of an aguna, that a person can't get remarried because there's a husband who's holding them down, tying them down for a get. Aguna also means a woman who's stuck and just can't get married. So you have a case like this, an almana. You can have a woman who's going to be an almana for the rest of her life. It's something that's a terrible situation. Perhaps that would be something that we would consider to be very serious as well.
I want to approach that from the opposite way. So today you have an infrastructure established in most Western countries where there is all these different aid programs for anybody who's got a young child, etc., in those circumstances. Mm-hmm. And you start to feel a child at relatively young ages. Why do we have to wait?
So I want to hold on to that thought till the end of this year, where we're going to quote Rav Moshe Tshuvas on this, as well as Rav Shlomo Kluger. Thank you. That's one of the instances where we would say Nishtanu Atvayim, but the question is how far do we say it? That's what we're going to get to. Thank you. So now, with this background in mind, so we know that Sakana is something that's probably an Issa D'Araisa for us to get involved in Sakana. We spoke a little bit about the levels of Sakana that one is allowed to get himself involved in. That's the Chasam Sofer distinguishes between Echad Mini Elef and something which is less than that. And now let's move forward and talk about the Halacha of fish and meat. So I just want to look. Obviously, this is just a synopsis of the Shulchan Aruch. Very often, the Aruch HaShulchan just speaks it out a little bit clearer, a little bit longer. So that's why I put the paragraph from the Aruch HaShulchan. But in fact, this is all taken from the Shulchan Aruch himself. It's just a little more concise here. It says the Aruch HaShulchan as follows. Sarach lizoher shelo lechol basar v'dag biyachad. Person has to be careful not to eat fish and meat together. Mipnei shekasha l'tzaras. The Gemara says in Sechem Daf Ayin Vav that if a person eats fish and meat together, he's going to be a high probability risk of tzaras. Nowadays we don't have tzaras.
You mean together, actually, together, one after the other? One.
So let's see. Ve'eino chilek bein basar behema lebasar of. There is no difference between fish and chicken and fish and meat. Both of them are a problem.
The tzaras and the Torah that you're talking about?
Yeah. Yeah. V'chein ein litzlos basar imdag b'taner katan ke'echad mishem recha. Says the Aruch HaShulchan, quoting the Mechaber, that one is not allowed to even cook them together in a small oven because we assume that some of the fumes from the meat are going to go into the fish and some of the fumes from the fish are going to go into the meat. Mihu, says the Aruch HaShulchan, b'dieved einu asur delo havi sakana rak derech bishul. The real concern is only if you actually cook the fish and the meat together. But over here, where you're not really cooking them together, it's just that some taste is transferring from one pot to the other, perhaps there's room to be mekel, and therefore b'dieved we would say you're allowed to eat it. Aval im hashuman zav mizeh lazeh, if some of the gravy spills out from one into the other, then v'adai aser, then that means they're actually being cooked together. That's not just that there's fumes going back and forth, that's that they're actually cooking with each other. V'yesh matir mitzliya afilu l'chatchila v'yesh osim gam b'dieved. What about a barbecue? Right? So tzliya means a barbecue. So am I allowed to, I mean, this question actually comes up. You want to fry, you want to put a salmon on the grill, and you also want to put a piece of steak. So very often people don't think about it, that they do one after the other. They don't even turn the grill off in between, so it doesn't even cool off, and you have the taste from the basar going straight into the salmon. No? I think it's probable. So that's a question if we would ask for that even be the evidence. So that's just something to be careful about. But Anu. Ein lanu rak divrei haramash hapasak to mutu b'dieved. Zakhtar achas shulchan halacha l'maisa. Yes, the Shach says maybe you should be machmir, but he says no, the Ramah says you could be mekel b'dieved. So l'chatchila, obviously, you shouldn't put the salmon steak on top of the grill right after you do the real meat steak. But he says b'dieved, we paskin like the Ramah that it's mutu. V'yirchatz yada ben achilas dagam l'basar. Zakhtar achas shulchan, you have to wash your hands in between eating fish and meat. You should also eat some bread in order to wash your mouth that well. So this gets to your point. Do I really have to wash my hands? Do I really have to eat the bread if I just had fish and now I'm going to have meat? Or is it only if the fish and the meat were cooked together, so then I have to be more careful? So he says there are those who say that just to eat fish after meat, that's nothing to worry about, or meat after fish, everything's fine. Because of... One second, you're a chassidus, you don't have schnapps in between?
Yeah, it's fine, yeah, beer with some wine, whatever, yeah,
right.
You eat right after.
No, fish, so that's a hepsic, you're cleaning out your mouth.
I'll clean the mouth, okay.
So that's good enough, but the question is, do you even have to do that? What do you mean? We don't find anyone that has a separate, right, we all have milchigs and fleishigs dishes. Does anyone have fish dishes?
No.
Right? That's what I'm saying. Right, but no, fish pots is only because of levash lan yachad. I'm talking about many people, many chassidim have the minhag to be machmer and have schnapps in between fish and the milk, the fish and the meat. But does anyone have an extra set of plates? Nobody does that. Why not? Because, you know, really the whole chumrah...
Used two forks, definitely.
Right, so really the whole chumrah really only was because what? By the bishul. We extend the chumrah and we say you should be careful even shlola achlam zeh zeh. Now look at this. Zakhtar Ramah, you don't even have to wash out your mouth. It's a chumrah. Midas chassid is very nice. However, the Ramah says you don't even have to. There are many who say that nowadays nishtanu hatvayim, everything is completely different. We don't have the same set of rules that they had in the times of Chazal. The Rofim, the doctors in the times of Chazal, thought that this was something that could really bring about a dangerous situation. You're going to get tzaras, you're going to break out with some hives or whatever it's going to be, so you got to be careful not to have the meat and the fish together. But nowadays, says the Magen Avraham, nishtanu hatvayim. You can even cook the fish and the meat together, nothing to worry about, the whole thing is not applicable bizmaneinu at all. The Chassam Sofer writes in a tshuva, he's medayik in the Rambam, the fact that the Rambam doesn't bring this halacha anywhere about the fish and the meat. How come the Rambam leaves it out? The Gemara says, "Beferish Shem and Vav." The Rambam always quotes the Gemara. Zaktach Samsovi, you can be medayik from here that since the Nishtanu Atvayim, this halacha is not nogeh b'zman hazeh b'chlal, and he feels that that's how the Rambam left it out, because it just doesn't make any difference. So this is the discussion. There are those who are machmir, obviously midas chasidus, to have some sort of drink in between, and obviously we're all machmir not to cook it together. That everyone's careful about. What?
Same plates.
Same plates. Yeah, we're not so careful about anything. You go to a shmork, right? Right? So you don't always take a new plate in between...
And the sushi and the steak, of course.
You do?
Yeah.
Sure.
I don't know. I don't think everyone's so careful
about it.
Halacha.
It's halacha today.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Most people are not so careful. What? Yeah, so forks is a chumra. Forks is a chumra. But Meikar Adin, it seems very clear. The Aruch HaShulchan tells us. Meikar Adin, you know, the Magen Avraham tells us the whole thing is out the window. The whole thing doesn't apply. So I just want to show you.
You can't have meat and then fish afterwards.
Why not?
I don't know.
Why not? It's just generally not the way we have a meal. Usually we have an entree. No, I don't think so.
You have to wash out between the meat and the fish the same way.
Yeah, the same thing. Yeah. Okay. So.
I'll look into a white.
Okay. Very good. So I want to. So I just want to look into an issue, halacha l'maisa, that was raised in the OU. So I have two documents that I put on here. One is F41, F stands for fish, fish 41, and fish document 42. These are from the OU's official documents. And this is about the following. I listened with my sister-in-law today how you pronounce this word, Worcestershire sauce. So if you can figure out how to say it. So Worcestershire sauce is a steak sauce. And Worcestershire sauce has anchovies in it. Anchovies are... fish. So how do you have these fish derivatives inside of the steak sauce? And it's not just that you're going to eat them together. You put the steak sauce while you're cooking it. So that's the real deal. That's the real thing, that you're going to put it into the mixture of the bishul. How are we allowed to do that? So the question is as follows. Hey, mutter lahanik hechsher lewustershire sauce. Sheyesh bo ma'at tam dag. It has a little bit of a percentage of a flavor of fish, of anchovies. Elishu bevadei bata b'shishim. The anchovies for sure are less than shishim in the mixture. Umishdamshem b'shish be sauce. Hazeh bechdei lahatim basar b'shas b'shula. So that's the question that was raised in the OU. Are we allowed to give a hechsher to this sauce, the sauce that's going to be used on the steak as we're cooking it, if in fact we know that the sauce really has anchovies inside of it? So that is the question that was raised. Now, what's the question? Why don't you say it's less than shishim? It's mutter. Answer is because generally, we assume this is the way we started, that in holchem b'pikuach nefashas acha harov. So yes, in kol ha-terakula, we assume if something's batal b'shishim, it's mutter. When it comes to something which is a sakana, the darkei tshuva even wants to argue that we don't go after something which is a svek sveka. Even a svek sveka we won't be makel by a sakana. So over here, for sure, even though it's less than shishim, that was the question that was raised. Perhaps we should be machmir and not give a heksher on this because people are going to use it to cook their steak.
But not necessarily Jews.
So then it does need a hechsher. If it's for non-Jews, then it does need a hechsher.
No, so I'm glad we're using it for fish. I mean, because
what do you mean?
It's a sauce, OU fish. It's
yeah.
OU fish.
Yeah.
So most of us know that we don't use that. Mm-hmm. We use the other Worcestershire sauce that doesn't have a fish in it.
Oh, yeah?
But it's the whole world.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not just
the original. The original.
Yeah. I don't know. This was written in Tufshin Nun Gimel. What year is that?
There is Worcestershire
20 years ago.
20 years ago, before they had the different kinds of Worcestershire sauce. So I assume there was just one. So listen to this. So my father wrote a tshuva as follows. Das HaMagen Avram, the Magen Avram says, like we just saw in the Aruch HaShulchan, LeFakfek V'lomar De'ulei B'zman HaZeh Yesh Lomar De'Nishtanu Atvayim. The Magen Avram tells us that nowadays we know the Metzias is not the same as it used to be. Ve'ein Leser Basar Shenizbal Shal B'Dagim. The Magen Avram wants to say that we shouldn't aser meat that was cooked together with fish. Even though the Gemara says Beferish Imsachim Dafayin Vav that we have to be concerned, says the Magen Avraham, Nishtanu Atvayim, Sharei Rofez Manenu Omrim She'em Ezes Mishim Sakana. Our doctors will tell you that there's no issue at all with having fish and meat together. Vayin Darki Tshuva Simen Kuf Tazayin Sifkat and Tazayin Shegdoli Acharonim Tzirfu Es Dvar of the Snif Lahakel Kishayesh Od Zdade Heter. So we try not to rely on the Magen Avraham himself and say that, oh, everything's mutter nowadays, just throw out the whole din. But generally, the Darkei Tshuva says, if you have other reasons to be mekel also, then perhaps we'll add this into the mixture. The Magen Avraham also says the whole thing doesn't apply. Vayin shom b'pischei tshuva v'darkei tshuva shenechaku ha-poskim l'inin hach sakana de-baser v'dag shen ezbashla b'yachad em yesh lachosh afilu kishein ha-dag nosein tam b'hechsher b'akosher kigon b'ofen shekvar nespatel b'shishim. So there is a machlokes in the darkei tshuva. What if it is batel b'shishim? Do you assume that the same way in Kol HaTorah Kula we say batel b'shishim is considered like it's not here? So too in this kind of case, when it comes to fish and meat, maybe we should say also, once it's less than shishim, it's good enough. Bidasa iser v'heter v'rova poskim l'hakel b'zeh, v'harbe poskim osifu l'hakel od v'lomar, de'em b'kagon da mishem e'em b'vat l'nisa l'chatchil. Alkein, b'vade mutu l'hanik heksher l'sos kazeh. We have a right to give a heksher, an OU, on the sauce. Shetam hadag shabok kvar nisbatel b'shishim. Because all the anchovy flavor is totally butled into the mixture.
When they cooked it, when they made it, probably that's what they're talking about.
Right, when they made it. Right, so now
not in the bottle.
Right.
Not an issue.
Correct. Correct.
But it's not an issue of flavor, if I understand it correctly. The issue was that somehow the essence of fish and meat
texture
combination is dangerous. So what's the difference if you taste it or you can't taste it? If it's there, it's there.
Saying it's poison, it's poison.
Right.
So that's why we generally assume that when it comes to sakana, you have to be even more machmir, because poison is poison. You're playing with fire.
It doesn't matter. It's not either. You can say arsenic is anything you can't taste. It's possible. You should don't worry about it.
So the assumption is, when we say batel b'shishim, I mean, we have such a concept. Let's say you have poison, right? And you pulverize a poison cyanide pill. I don't know. Are they common pills? Yeah? So you pulverize a pill and you diffuse it. What? You dilute the whole thing. So if you dilute it into a whole vat of milk, a whole vat of orange juice, you're not going to die, right? If you drink a cup of orange juice, it's going to the whole. The potency.
Cyanide to kill a person.
Yeah.
Then that same enough cyanide, it doesn't matter if you take it. If it's 100 milligrams, whatever it is, you're only 100 milligrams straight. You're taking 100 milligrams.
No, I don't mean you pour it into a cup.
You only take one glass out of
I'm saying you're taking one glass out of a whole vat of orange juice, and it has some cyanide in it. Obviously, it's not going to work. Right, so that's the same thing over here. We assume that when you have something is so overwhelmed by shishim against it, so it becomes totally diluted. That's the way we assume by Basa B'Chala. Right. We wouldn't be Mekel. Correct. We have the Magen Avraham in the first place that says it's not poison. And even if you say it is poison, it's already batel b'shish. That's what the Darkei Tshuva says. So he writes as follows. Alkein bevadei mutu lahanik hechsher ha-sos shekazeh, shetam hadag shebo kvar nisbatel b'shishim, afilu nitfas al ha-petek shel ha-bakbuk, shehu steak sauce. Even though we're writing that it's steak sauce, and anyone who looks at the ingredients is going to say, hey, why does it have anchovies in here? How can you call this a steak sauce and have an OU? We know that everyone's going to use it for their steak, because that's what it's intended for. Precisely like you just said, that you put together all that's done. Number one, you have the Magen Avraham who says it's not poison. Number two, even if it is poison, it's batel b'shishim. And once you have diffused enough, then we assume that it's going to be diluted and you won't have the poison at all. You don't have to put the OUF on it. Does it have an F nowadays?
Yeah. It says OU fish.
So I guess they became more machmir.
It says F-I-S-H.
Aha, for real. Shouldn't think F is fleshig.
It's not because the hechsher, it's because the food allergies.
That might be true. I think Rabbi Belsky picked up on that in the next paragraph. You'll see. Ve'elu hakonim shirotim. This is in real time. This is very geschmack. These documents. You should get your hands on them. Ve'elu hakonim shirotim lahachmer baze. I'll send anyone if you want. V'shalolu ishtamish b'soas hazel lebishol baso yuchlu la'ayim berishimas hamachilim shal apetek v'likro shiyesh bo anchovies v'sul al midi. Fine. If there's a person who's such a big machmer, who's so careful never to have fish and meat and nothing, he doesn't want to be mekel at all. So let him look. Don't use it. It's your problem. But for us to give a heksher is no problem. So this is what my father signed off on in Shlach Tavshin Nun Gimel, 20 years ago. Tavshin Samachay, 10 years later, Rabbi Belsky decided to respond. So he writes, Kvar hodati denichali v'talich hanal, I agree with the process that we have. V'yafech riyah yididi Rav Tzvi Shechter, shemamakam sheyesh dag v'taruvus ha-maychal b'yosir me'achan mi-shishim. If you have the anchovies which are less than shishim in the mixture, sheyesh l'samna b'tevas fish. Right, so you see now where it changed. I'm sorry, you're right. If it's more than shishim, then they agreed that you have to write fish on it. It's not good enough to have the F. You see, this is where it came from. Ubepachas mishishim, if it's less than shishim, ain't sarach ala yesh lichtav rak birashim as hamachilim. You have to write in the ingredients that there's anchovies in here, but you don't have to write a fish symbol on the OU. Avo mishum maisa basi lahadgish, I'm coming just to point out a point. Sheyesh livdok ech reshmul ben hamachilim. You have to look, how do they generally write this in the ingredients? Ki bu'uvda shema'arvim shemen shal omega 3, Rabbi Belsky's appella. He knows every ingredient for every product out there. It's pretty amazing. They have two different roles. My father generally does the Klaliyus Dikup Sukkim for the OU, and Rabbi Belsky, my father doesn't know any products. And Rabbi Belsky knows every single ingredient in every product. So here he writes that when you have omega 3, haba ruba midagim, this omega 3, whatever it is, comes, it's a derivative from fish. I don't know. Regilim lirsham rak shem hashemen. He said they just write the dugma omega 3 oils. Ve'emes tzarach lichtov sheyesh dagim b'sochem machilim ve'lichtov beferush tevas dagim o shem hadag uvilti zeh lo yavinu sheshman sheshemen zehu midag. So he points out that when you have omega 3 inside of a mixture, inside of some sort of product, they don't write that the omega 3 happens to be a fish oil. So to the stam am ha'aretz like myself, who doesn't know anything what omega 3 is made of, so I read it and I say, okay, it's fine. So he says we shouldn't be any less than the way the companies are putting out the labels on the ingredients. Then you go a couple of years later. When is this written? Tavshin Nun Vav. So this is a long story. I guess we're regressing. This is backwards. So so in F42, the question continued as follows: are anchovies avita l'taima and Worcestershire sauce? What's the question? We know that there's a din of Bittel Barot, Batel B'Shishim. We have such a concept. But what happens when something is Milsa Da'abida L'Taima? Something is specifically made to add flavor into the mixture. So then you can't say it's Batel. Like you were saying, the whole reason why I mix this in is obviously because I want it to taste better. It's no Santam. So Shishim, generally the reason why we're making on Shishim is because once there's 60, which is overwhelming, this little drop that fell in, then we assume it's not no Santam anymore. But if it's Avida L'Taima, if the whole point why I put it in the first place was because I want to add flavor, then we don't say Bittel B'Shishim. So the question was as follows. My father writes, B'Shavu Shavar Pagashti Yes Kvoter Rab Yaakov Hapfer from Baltimore. V'amrli Sherab Adaf HaKashu Shekasavnu, the OU printed, used to print all these sheets over here. Sheyesh L'Hokah Barotev, Sheyesh Bo Taruvis Dagim V'Derech Ha'olam L'Shtamish Bo Af L'Bishol Basar, the steak sauce. Mitam Svek Sveka Sheladas HaMagen Avram N'Shtan HaTvayim. According to the Magen Avraham, the poison is not poison bismanenu at all. Bein lachash bechal sakanazu bismanenu. Bekama posman kasu shekala sheadag misbatal b'shishim. Gam kein ein lachash the sakana. So since you have a svek sveka, you have number one, the Magen Avraham, number two, the fact that it's batal b'shishim. So that's why the OU is make. Ba'azetan Rabbi Yaakov, Rabbi Hapfer disagreed, and he said, shalafi meitav yidiyoso, according to his understanding of what's happening, tam dag ha'anshovi hu kol kachazak. The reason why they put the anchovy into the Worcestershire sauce is not just because they want a texture or something like that. It's because the flavor is going to enhance the sauce. So that's the question. This is a major question. Is this something that we would permit Bizman Hazeh or not? Should the OU take off their hechsher? Because maybe Rabbi Hapfer is correct in saying that the anchovies are a milsa da'avida l'taima, and shishim is not going to help. And you can't just rely on the Magen Avraham alone. Generally, we're not mekel. We assume you need at least two serufim l'hakel. So what's going on here? So I followed up this week with Rabbi Gersten from the OU, who's the recording secretary. He's a big Talmud Chacham. So he wrote to me as follows. You have it in reality? So he wrote to me as follows. In reality, the amount of anchovies used in the, I guess this is how you spell it, Worcestershire sauce is very small. One place I visited recently had one sauce that was less than 0.3% anchovies, and one was 0.16% of anchovies. It is not noticeable by itself to the layman, but perhaps in combination with other flavors, it does something. We refer to this as zeb zegorim, and we consider this to be batel. So that is basically what he said. I asked him, zeb zegorim means you have two factors that are bringing about something, two ingredients that together are bringing about a certain result. What do you call it? Synergy. What?
But he said it's so little, the anchovies, that it's not even zeb is there.
No. He says the anchovies together with other things bring about a certain result. But he said, therefore, we don't have to worry about it because we assume that when you have zeb is agorim, you have a synergy, two things coming together that are causing a certain result, that's considered batel mevutel.
So on its own, it doesn't
That's what we assume. So on its own, it's not going to give off flavor. Correct. So that's why we would assume that's the heter why the OU has stuck to their guns and said that this is permissible to give a hachsharan. Now, so we all know that there generally is a chumrah that we have not to cook meat and fish. Generally, most of us are machmer for that. And there are different minhagim about how far we have to take the chumrah. Some are machmer to wash out their mouths. Some say you don't have to be so machmer. Whatever it might be. But in Shulchan Aruch, Yeruday, and Simon Peches, we all know the din is that you're not allowed to have basar and chalav al Shulchan Echad. We know even though you're not allowed to eat basar and chalav together, but if let's say I'm eating basar and you're eating chalav for supper, you're having pizza and I'm having a steak, we have to put on separate tablecloths, we have to make a hecker. So why don't we say over here as well, if one person is having sushi and one person is having a steak, why don't we say also, if we assume chamira sakanta mei surah, you have to be more careful by a sakana, more so than you would by an iser, then why are we makel? By basar b'chalav itself, we say you have to put on a different tablecloth.
You're not going to die from what you eat it.
Right, and over here you're going to die. So frak the night of Yehuda, why don't we say you have to go and make a hecker? Why don't you put on a separate tablecloth? Zak the night of Yehuda, no. Gufa, because chamir sakanta me'isura, because people are so afraid, so you're going to be careful. You don't need to make an extra hecker. What? Right, everyone's going to stay away from it. Everyone knows on their own to stay away from it. That's what the night of Yehuda answers. Yes, you're right, by basar b'chalav, people don't take Yisurim so seriously. So by basar b'chalav anachinami, you have to make two separate tablecloths, you have to do two separate things. When it comes over here to basar and dogim, you have the right to be mekel and eat together on the same table. Yeah.
The theory would be opposite. Since today, many people understand about the mug that the Magen Avraham says...
Doesn't apply.
It doesn't apply, so they're going to be kal about it. They're not going to... If in fact it's something that we have to worry about, then we should not make a heck, because otherwise it's not important.
Interesting. Okay.
People eat all the time together.
Sure. Yeah. So we're all makel like the Nebi Yehuda writes. Okay. So we do. So now let's move our conversation to the second half. Now that we are now we're our first part of the shiur is now over. Now that there's 10 minutes left. So let's move to the second half of the conversation, and that is a very fascinating one. How do we look at certain things that obviously are clearly nishtanu atvam mizmanazet? For example, you have many sugyas and shas where the chachamim lay out daf after daf gemara and tell us about many refuas that they used to use in the time of shas, in the times of chazal. For example, in Shabbos daf samach zayin, in Gittin, the gemara has samaches till daf ayin, two blots straight of all these refuas the gemara has. So how do we look at these kind of things? So Tosis writes in Ma'ikat and Daf Yud Aleph. Do I have it on here?
No.
Oh, I forgot to. I guess we ran out of space.
If you have a bone stuck in your throat.
Right. So the Gemara has all these funny things.
Bone in your forehead, but right. That works. Who said it in Jew? You said it, no?
No.
Me.
It was.
I don't know. Okay. So I would like to see a video of the bone popping out of his throat. Okay. Yeah, that's what people say. That's what people say. The pigeon. So Tosis writes in Ma'ikan Daf Yud Aleph that nowadays shenishtanu atvaim, one is not supposed to be sumich on the refuas that we find in Chazal. That's what Tosis writes. Not only that, Zakar b'Kiva Eger in Masechah Shabbos. That's on the bottom. He quotes the Ma'aril, and the Ma'aril says, "Amar lanu Ma'aril, kol refuas shebechal haTalmud." Asr l'nalsos osam, Zakar b'kiv eger. It's not stam that you shouldn't follow them. It's asr to follow them. Mishum de ein adam yachal lamed al ikaran, because perhaps you don't really know what Chazal are telling you to do. V'chi lo yala b'yadam yilagu al divrei chachamim. Now that we have medical experts who tell us that this is the way to get better from this and this sickness, you're just going to laugh at the Chazal when you look at the refuas that they have. In fact, they quote that Reb Chaim Kanievsky when he went to yeshiva. So the yeshiva used to skip, the Chabina yeshiva, where he learned, used to skip those daf in Gittin that had the refuas. When he came home, the stipler said, "Oh, what do you mean? You skipped the gemaras?" And the stipler ran through all the gemaras with him. When I learned Gittin with my father, we got up to those gemaras, and he said, "Okay, let's skip two blot." And we didn't learn them, and we made a siyum on Gittin. We said the hadron. So he felt that he feels it's a shaila bitul Torah to learn these blot. And he said that many write, what happens if are you mechuyev to say Berachas HaTorah if you're going to learn that or not? It's a big shaila. It's a big shaila they discuss, whether or not we consider the refuah shel Talmud to be real learning or not. My father said he remembered the story with Reb Chaim Kanievsky the other way, that in yeshiva they learned it, and when he came home, the stipler said, "What are you doing? You know, like, don't waste your time." I don't know. So,
when
not
I
sure.
Was in yeshiva, you used to skip other stuff in the morning.
Yeah, okay. Good. It's not for young children, right? So, in fact, the Yamshel Shlomo writes in Maseches Chulin, The Yamshel Shlomo takes it a step further and he says there's a cheirem hakadmonim. The kadmonim made a cheirem against people studying the Refuah Shabbat Talmud and practicing the Refuah Shabbat Talmud. That's the way the Yamshel Shlomo is quoted by many Achronim. The Stechemet quotes it in his Mareches Refuah in the Stechemet and Mareches Reish. So over there, they discuss all the Marmakomas. This is the famous, I'm off the record now, this is the famous Tiferes Yisrael. Why the Hasidim don't like the Tiferes Yisrael? Because he said that Mitzitza Bepeh is something that medically we know doesn't make any sense. So that's why he said we should get rid of Mitzitza Bepeh. That was why the Hasidim don't like the Tiferes Yisrael, because he said that Nishtanu Atvam, and therefore we get rid of the whole Halacha that had been the Minig for so many generations. But this is not so crazy. This is something that has precedent all over Shas, as we will see. So let's go into a couple of examples. Each one is very interesting and very nogeh halacha lemaisa. A couple of examples go as follows. The Gemara says in Shabbos, in Perek Rabbeleza de Mila, that in the times of Chazal, they used to heat up water and bathe a child before the bris and after the bris. That was the clear minig in all the communities in the times of the Chazal, in the times of the Gemara. Says the Gemara, what happens if on Shabbos you have a child who had a bris mila and now all the water that we prepared beforehand for him to use spills out? So the Gemara says you're allowed to be Mechal Shabbos to go and heat up water, turn on a fire on Shabbos, because we consider this to be a sakana if you're not going to wash the baby with the hot water before and after the bris. Mama Shapel. That's what the Gemara says. Zakta Shulchan Aruch in Siman Shin Lamed Aleph Siftes, that Ata Lo Nagu Berechitza Klal. Nowadays we don't have this practice. Needless to say, you're certainly not allowed to be Mechal Shabbos nowadays to heat up water for the baby. And the Mishnah Berurah explains, Mishum Dipshita Le Dineshtanu Atvayim. It's clear, all the medical experts of our times tell us that this is something that obviously does not work, it doesn't help, it doesn't make a difference. To go and bathe the baby in hot water right after the bris doesn't make him heal any faster. So that's why nowadays we certainly would not be allowed to be Mechal Shabbos when it comes to the hot water for the bris. Example number two that I want to discuss is also Halacha L'maisa. The Gemara says, Anida Dav Zayin Amud Beis. The Gemara tells us a rule that for the first 3 months that a woman is pregnant, we assume that she's still going to have her regular menstrual cycle like she would have throughout the rest of her life. That's the general assumption of the Gemara. In Shulchan Aruch, in Siman Kuf Pei Tes, the Shulchan Aruch goes with the strict reading of the Gemara, and the Shulchan Aruch says, the first 3 months of a woman's pregnancy, she has to keep the regular rules of Estos, because we assume a woman is going to have regular Rias Dam every month the same way she would have had beforehand. That's what's clear in Shulchan Aruch. So Rabbi Avadi Yosef takes this very literally, and he has the following Shaila. I'll read it to you. Odes HaBaal Shatan al hayalat she'ena beno. He had a husband here who got divorced from his, husband was going on a business trip. Now it's whatever, a couple of years later, and the husband is divorced from his wife. Yeah. So the husband is trying to come up with a chap why he shouldn't have to support the child. So here's the story. Habal toin al hayalat she'ena beno. He says, I don't have to support the child, he's not my kid. How do I know it's not my kid? And patrim zanosav, he says, I don't have to feed him. When I went on a business trip to Chutz La'aretz for a few weeks, I know that when I left her, she was a nida. She was in the middle of her period. She had a regular cycle like she always has every month. When I came back to Eretz Yisrael, took a 6 month leave, okay. So when he came back after 6 months, no wonder they're divorced. Matza osa behi rayon. So he comes back 6 months later and he sees that his wife is pregnant. Well, how could it be? What do you mean? When I left her, she was a nida. When I come back 6 months later, she's 6 months pregnant. What's going on? It must be that this is not my child. 3 months after he returned, she all of a sudden pops out a baby. Ushvuayim yalda esayalad hazeh. After 3 months and 2 weeks, this baby is born. So the husband argues, obviously she was mezana with someone because it doesn't make any sense. I know that she was in need at the time that I left. So, says everybody is safe. Well, absolutely he doesn't have such a taina. Why not? Because the first 3 months is not a riot that she's not pregnant. Maybe even though she was in need at the time that you left, maybe she became pregnant beforehand, and then she became a nida, and now she's going to give birth. But it's no indication that this is not your child. So you have to support. Rabbi Avadi Yosef takes the Shulchan Aruch literally, and he says, Halacha L'maisa, Paskin in this case, that since the Mechaber writes in Ilchas Nida, that the first 3 months, the woman is going to have a regular Ria, the regular cycle like she otherwise would have had, so therefore he Paskins Halacha L'maisa, that this father is Mechiv to support the child, because it's not a question for sure this child is his child. That's what Rabbi Avadi Yosef says. Rabbi Moshe goes to town. He doesn't discuss this particular case, but Rav Moshe says, Achshav pshita the nishtana ha-tvoim. When a woman becomes pregnant, we all know that 99% of the times she stops seeing dam right away. Yes, we have some cases where it doesn't happen that way. Or certainly we have many cases where a woman's spotting. Obviously spotting is not the same. But generally when you have a regular pregnancy, we assume that the woman is not going to have a regular cycle that she otherwise would have had throughout the rest of the years of her life. So therefore, says Rav Moshe, Nishtanu atvayim, and Rav Moshe comes out lahakel in a particular halacha when it comes to, let's say, the veses on the second month of her pregnancy. Does she have to be purished from her husband on the Yom HaVeses or not? Rabbi Avadi Yosef says, absolutely. The Shulchan Aruch says, first 3 months you still have to be concerned she's going to see dam. Rabbi Yosef says, what are you talking about? We know Nishtanu atvayim, women, once they become pregnant, do not see dam anymore. So there's nothing to be concerned about. She does not have to be purished from her husband at the time of the veses. If you take Rabbi Moshe's din and you transfer it back into this, you apply it back into this case that Rabbi Avadi Yosef mentioned, what would the halacha be? What would the halacha be? Perhaps the husband does have a taina. So perhaps he has a taina. However, obviously, if you're any sensible or thinking person, you'll say that nowadays we have an institution called DNA testing. And you'll go ahead and you'll test and you'll find out if this is actually his son or not. So the whole shayla is mute, is moot bizman hazeh. Unless you're from those school of thought who believe that we don't recognize DNA testing la'alacha, which is mamash apella. We won't get into that now. Let me go into another halacha, which is in Eben HaEzer, Simen Kuf Nun Vav Sif Dalet, a very fascinating din. The halacha is if a woman loses her husband, and she has no children, so she needs to do either Yibum or Chalitza. Right? She's not allowed to get remarried until she does Yibum or Chalitza. What happens if she had a child? So, she's allowed to go ahead and get remarried. Zok the Shulchan Aruch as follows. Misha Meis, person who dies, V'hiniach Ishtemu Beres. What happens if the husband dies while the wife is pregnant? Imhi pila, if she has a stillborn, harezu tisiabe. Why? Because it means they never had children. Ben ein lo, he died without having children. Im yalda v'yatza havlan chay la'aber ha'olam. Let's say she gives birth. In fact, she gives birth. Afilu meis b'shasha nolad, even if he dies right away, within a few minutes. But as long as he was born alive, the woman no longer has to do Yibum or Chalitza. Because we don't say that's considered Ben Ein Lo. We say, yes, he did have a child, and now she's allowed to go ahead and marry whoever she wants. Hare'im optur mechalitza min ha'yibum, ava midivrei sofrim, at she'odea bevade she'kala lo chadasha v'nolad l'tisha chadashim gemurim. What is that all about? Says the Mechaber. The only time we're going to say that if the woman gives birth and the child dies right away, that the woman is now free to go ahead and get married to whoever she wants, that's only in a case where we know for sure that it was a 9-month pregnancy. What's he coming from? So we all know the Gemara has a suffix, a machlokes in the Gemara, if you'll let us letisha, you'll let us lemukutayin or not. If a woman gives birth in the 9th month, it used to be, they assumed in the times of Chazal that there was a 7-month pregnancy and a 9-month pregnancy. Two different things. 8, the child for sure was going to die. That's what the Gemara says. In fact, the Gemara says that if you have a child, the Gemara says in Shabbos, Daf Kuf Lamed Hey, just to digress for a minute. If you have a child who's born in the 8th month, you can't do the Bris Milah on Shabbos. Because we assume that child is for sure going to die. What? Might be Mukta, that's what the Gemara says. The Gemara says it might be like Eitzim Avana Ve'afer. This child is mamish, he's a nothing. What do you mean? He's alive and cooking, he's smiling, he's laughing, doesn't make a difference. No, but Lamaisa, if he's born in the 8th month, we assume, not going to live. Chazanish and Rav Shlomo Zalman write in the Shmir Shabbos Kachasa, obviously Nishtanu Atvam, and we know a child is born in the 8th month, oh, of course he has a chance to survive, and it could be just like everybody else. Of course we'd be Mechal Shabbos B'Zman Hazeh. All I'm pointing out is you see from all these different cases that Nishtanu Atvam is not just an idea that we say, oh, things change. Things change and it makes a difference. Halacha L'maisa, you have to really figure out, are these halachas applicable B'Zman Hazeh or not? Doesn't mean you just throw out all the dinim just because you think something doesn't apply. You have to really have the Ramah or great Talmid Chacham telling you that. So over here, says the Ramah that Bizman Hazeh, the Ramah Paskins, Bizman Hazeh, Bevada Yoledes, Letisha Yoledes Limkutayin, Zak the Ramah, even though the Gemara has a machlokes, if a 9-month pregnancy can be early or late, whatever, still says the Ramah Bizman Hazeh, we all know a woman in her 9th month could give birth 2 weeks early, 2 weeks late. We know it's not 9 months to the day. We all know that. So the Ramah says, therefore, Bizman Hazeh, Halacha L'maisa would make a difference. If a child is born, and the husband already had passed away, the wife was pregnant at the time that the husband passed away, and now she gives birth, and 5 minutes after she gives birth, the child dies. So the Ramah says, since Nishnana Batvayim, and since Bizman Azeh, we know that a 9-month pregnancy, the woman could give birth early, and normally things could be healthy, and everything could be fine. The Ramah says that therefore we would have the right to be Mekel and say that the woman is allowed to go ahead and marry without Yibam or Chalitza. So there's another difference that we say Halacha L'maisa. So maybe we'll skip a couple of the cases, but one more case I want to discuss is a case that actually we get a Shaila quite often about this, and that goes as follows. The Gemara says in Yevamasai in Heyam and Aleph, Zachar Shenikva Beitza Achas, if one of the Beitzim is Nikva, it gets punctured, something happens to it, so it says in the Gemara clearly that he's not allowed to get married to a Jewish girl because he has the status of a Patsua Daka, the Gemara says. The Gemara says he has a din of a Patsua Daka, and Patsua Daka is not allowed to be Lava B'Kahal. That is the way we paskin la halacha in Shulchan Aruch and Eben HaEzer. Tosis writes on the daf in Yevamos, what's the reason why he's considered Patsua Daka just because Nikva Beit Sasa? What's the problem? So Tosis writes, the reason why is because he's Eino Roy L'Hoylet. The scientists thought that a person who's Nikva Beit Sasa cannot give birth. So since he's Eino Roy L'Hoylet, so we brand him as a Patsua Daka, and Mamela, he's out of the running, he cannot marry a Jewish girl. That's what the Shulchan Aruch paskins as well. The Pischei Tshuva there says, quoting the Yamshar Shlomo, that halacha zu mehilchas harofim hu. That's what the Pischei Tshuva quotes in the Yamshar Shlomo, that this halacha is from the hilchas harofim, and therefore he says, if you have a situation where such a guy miraculously is able to be molded, then we would not brand him as a patsua daka, and we would say that he is allowed to marry a Jewish girl. So this happens all the time. Rabbi Moshe Feinstein writes this Tshuva in Eben HaEzer Chelek Beis Simon Gimel, and he says, Achshav Nishtanu Atvayim. Rabbi Moshe says, we all know, if a person gets, it's very Nogei L'maisa, very often you have people who need to have, unfortunately, a testicular biopsy. Right? So you have such a thing. So that's Nikva Beit Sasso. That's the regular case of the Gemara, the classical case of Nikva Beit Sasso. So you're going to tell the guy he's not allowed to go ahead and get married? Just because he had a biopsy? It's Mamish, it's Maisa Mechol Yom. The Shaila comes up all the time. It's an extremely important case. So Rav Moshe says, no, absolutely not. Why? Because Achshav Nishtanu Atvayim, it's Pasha to us that a man, even if he's Nikva Beit Sasa, and Rav Moshe takes it further, you ask a doctor, even if it's Nidla Beit Sasa, if it's taken out, not just if it's punctured, if you only have one of them, even that's good enough to have children. So therefore Rav Moshe says, we have the right to be Mekel Halacha L'maisa K'neged the Shulchan Aruch, and we have the right to say that even if someone goes through a procedure where Nikva Beit Sasa or Nidla Beit Sasa, we would assume he's still Mutter Lava Bekal and he is not branded as a Patsua Daka. So this is basically some of the cases that we find. Again, the place where we started was a discussion about Nishtanu Atvam in general, how that relates to the case of Basar and Dagim. And you see that this is not Stam Magen Avraham who made up a din here and said Nishtanu Atvam just in this context. No, Nishtanu Atvam is something that we find all over the place. Rav Moshe has it in a lot of tshuvas in many different contexts. I forgot to relate back to your point. Yeah, so let's just make that point and then we'll stop. Again, we mentioned before that there is a discussion whether a woman has to wait 24 months till the child is 2 years old or till the child is 18 months. That's the question after their husband dies. So, Shlomo Kluger writes in a tshuva in the Elef L'Chashlomo that nowadays he assumes that most women don't nurse until the child is 2 years old. And he says, most women don't even nurse till the child is 18 months. It's very unusual that you have women who do it. Nowadays, our wives are working, or, you know, things are different. Nishtanu Atvayim. Obviously, the circumstances are changing. So Shlomo Kluger says, look, you have the right to be Mekel if you have other Tzadim L'Hakel as well. That's what he says. Let's say the woman is a wealthy woman, the husband is a wealthy guy, whatever, they put money in an escrow. What? You have formula, you have ways. No, but formula costs money, the same way milk used to cost money. So formula is not good enough. But let's say you put money in an escrow and you say, here's money for the next 2 years of the child's life.
The government does it for you. The government.
Right. So that's what Shlomo Kluger argues. He says, look, if you have a couple of tzadim l'hakel, since nowadays in the first place women don't nurse that long, and you have other tzadim l'hakel, like the government funds it, or you're going to put money in an escrow, or whatever you're going to do, so then l'maisa, you have a right to be mekel and to go ahead and marry. Rabbi Shlomo Kluger is only comfortable saying this if you have a few tzadim l'hakel. Rabbi Moshe takes it further. Rabbi Moshe says, well, no, nowadays no one nurses 2 years, even if you have women who do it, it's very unusual, very uncommon. So Rav Moshe says, forget all the other snifim l'hakel. A woman is allowed to go ahead and get remarried after 18 months. What do you mean? Women don't nurse till 18 months either. So Rav Moshe says, no, I'm not willing to break down and say that you're allowed to be mekel all the way and just get married now. But Rav Moshe says you can marry 18 months. You could paskin like the Shita, which is more mekel, even though the Shulchan Aruch is not mekel.
Even if the husband says, no problem, I'll
yeah. Yeah, so then you have Rav Shlomo Kluger's heter. My father always tells people as follows, not always, this doesn't happen that often, but my father tells people to do the following. If a woman sees that her husband is not well, and she sees that he's going to die in the next couple of months, so the etzah that we give a woman is the following. Tell her to stop nursing 3 months before the husband passes away. Right, exactly. So that's why, if she's not a meinekes, so how long do you have to stop being meinek in order not to be called a meinekes? So the psak that we generally tell people is manenu is if you see that the person is in a bad state of being, you should stop nursing 3 months before you think they're going to die.
Milk,
what? Again, if the woman stopped after 6 months, and when did the husband die?
The husband died 7 months. The husband died when the baby was a month old. Mm-hmm. The woman kept on nursing for 5 more months.
So at the time that the husband died, she had a din meinekes.
Right, and then she stopped nursing at 6 months, and she wants to get married in the 7th month.
So we don't allow that because we assume that she has a status of meinekes because she's branded at the time of the misa of her husband.
Yes, but now if she was no longer nursing, the baby's only 6 months old, and she's not nursing when she stops. She's not nursing when the husband is dead.
So we call that samkudadeha. They're dried up. She's not producing milk anymore.
Right.
So for some reason, the cutoff is you need to call in order to be called not a meinekes. You need 3 months. That's what my father's telling me today.
Okay, so
Hilchos
Times.
Yeah.
So meinekes would not have the best.
Yeah.
So if she stopped nursing 2 weeks before the Times, because of a 3 month break, she'd still be called
meinekes. I don't know. I have to look into it. It's an interesting question. I mean, it could be this is just different because there's a chashash here.
So Ramesh is 18 months and she was meinekes, so she stopped a year ago, you know, that she'd still be half to 18 months.
Yeah, so I think Ramesh would be mekel if you have the other snifim lahakel. Ramesh is only saying when you have no other snifim lahakel and you only want to be mekel because she stopped nursing, so then Ramesh says...
She's not a meinekes.
What?
She's not a meinekes. Halacha is only with the meinekes.
Right, the question is once you've changed, you're no longer nursing the fast. That's what people are trying to ask.
Right.
She stopped nursing.
She stopped nursing
after the husband died.
The husband died, the baby's 2 months old.
No.
4 months later,
So Chazal made a takana that a meinekes is not allowed to get married. So we look.
She's not a meinekes.
At the time that the husband died,
are you a meinekes or not?
Yes.
So you are. So then we brand you a meinekes for the next 18 months. Because we don't. But we don't know when you're going to stop.
And why she stopped? She met this guy. She's not married yet. So she stopped
right.
Now. So
maybe she's
married.
In love with him.
And what if the child died?
That's
just
title, whether you like it or not.
If the child died, obviously she's not a meinekes. There's no chashash anymore.
But she stopped.
You see, I think you said it correctly. Maybe you'll say the only. I think he's correct. Maybe the only reason why she stopped nursing is because she just loves the guy, wants to get married. And so that's the whole chashash. The baby's going to die.
But if she was already not nursing when
the husband what?
The husband was nifter. She was already not nursing.
Right.
The baby was 6 months old.
Right.
She was not nursing.
Mm-hmm.
So how does she fall into a category of meinekes?
Depends.
That's the question. So Moshe allowed someone like that to not have to wait 18 months.
Moshe shared 3 months.
No.
That's the question. Where did you get this?
Where did the 3 months come from? Yeah, I have to look into that more. But this is basically another example where we find this, that there is a lot more room to be makel b'zmaneinu because clearly we know nishtanu atvaim in many tchumim in halacha.